CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
And welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Dave Mathias will be telling us a little bit about a book that he worked on in regards to disability parenting stories. So, can you tell me a little bit about the book and its potential impact?
Well, the book we produced is called A Celebration of Family, Stories of Parents with Disabilities, and it's a collection of 30 stories of people who have disabilities and became parents. So it's not so much about my work, but as the experiences of parents.
So what were some of the common themes throughout the stories, some of the challenges these parents faced?
Many parents talk about discrimination and bias that they faced because they had disabilities. One parent in particular talked about having somebody called Child Protective Services on her just because she thought the woman just saw her in public and thought she shouldn't be a parent. And that's a fairly common theme in the book. Also, there's several stories of parents who were told by medical personnel that they shouldn't be parents. That's repeated a few times. Two things in particular stuck out to me when I was putting the book together. And I should say that this was done during COVID. Putting the book together was mostly during COVID. I knew most of the parents, although we went out of the state of Kentucky. It's 22 of the parents are Kentucky parents. We went out of the state of Kentucky for a few parents. And some of these stories are the results, 18 of the 30 stories are the results of Zoom interviews I did with the parents. And we recorded it and ran it through a transcription software and came up with a transcript of the interview, and then I kind of shaped the interviews into a cohesive narrative. So I interviewed 18 of the parents, and the other parents submitted their stories to me. There were a couple common themes, I think. First of all, I was impressed by how honest and open everybody was about their parenting experiences and what happened to them. And I guess it shouldn't have been too surprising since everybody likes to talk about their kids. But that was one thing, that the parents were very open and honest and wanted to share their experiences with in particular people with disabilities who might be thinking about becoming parents. So, and the other thing, we had a series of 8 questions we asked everybody. And the other thing that stuck out to me is that almost invariably, answer the question, what kind of adaptations or assistive technology did you need or have to make in order to be an effective parent? In almost invariably, the immediate response was some variation of, well, I think my child adapted to me more than I had to adapt to my child to be a parent. And that was a common theme, that the kids were resilient, very able to adapt to their parents' disability. It became normal for them. And that was probably the most impressive thing I got out of the interviews.
So, why do you think it's important to use the book to speak out against the assumption or the presumption that people with disabilities shouldn't be parents? What are you hoping will change in society's attitudes?
Well, the introduction was written by Jason Jones, breaks down pretty much the discrimination and bias that still exists. And we hope the book just reveals that a parent with a disability is just as normal. It should be a normal experience. It's done differently. It's a different kind of normal, but it shouldn't deprive, having a disability shouldn't deprive a person of becoming a parent if the child is in a safe environment. And I think with the proper supports, we prove in the book and a number of the stories that with the proper supports and knowledge and assistance, these folks were able to be effective parents. And I think we wanted to demonstrate that to people with disabilities who are considering parenthood. We're also interested in causing policy change, particularly in Kentucky, because in Kentucky, in a few disabilities, it's still possible for your child to be taken away just because you have a disability, with no consideration of functional ability, but it can be the factor in your child being removed. And we're trying to get that changed. We hope that these 30 stories make the case strong enough for that to happen, particularly in this state.
So, if you could send any message to the community about why it is parents with disabilities should at least be allowed to try, and why it should be taken into consideration they may be functional members of society, what would you say?
Well, we demonstrated over and over that it's possible. And as one of the parents says at the end of their story, because this is almost the exact question I ask the parents in the interviews, give them a chance. Avanora, I think, is a person who said, just give us a chance. And I think, again, if people have the proper supports, it's possible. It's just a different normal. Another parent says, just because you don't have a disability doesn't mean you'll be a good parent. And the same is true of, conversely, if you do have a disability, doesn't mean you can't be a good parent. So, the first chapter, the quote I like to use from a parent is, if you suck as a person, you'll probably suck as a parent too. But if you're a good, caring, and empathetic person, you'll show that as a parent also.
So, if there are any parents out there looking for more information, where might they find it?
Well, the book is available on Amazon. You can just get on Amazon and do a search for Celebration of Family. You should be able to find it. That's the only place it's available outside of Louisville right now. It's available in Louisville, Kentucky. Kentucky at a local bookstore, but Amazon has the book, and I hope people take the opportunity to read it.
I'd thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
In this segment of our show, Susan Ellsworth will be telling us a little bit about FASTE United. So, can you tell me a little bit about FASTE United?
Yeah, FASD United is the national voice for FASD in the United States. It went through a recent rebranding last year around the fall time. Previously, we were known as NOFAS, and NOFAS has been around for about 30 years. We took a look at our mission statement, where we were going, what we wanted to accomplish, and felt like that FASD United better represented who we were, bringing together many disciplines across the field of FASD, from researchers to clinicians and family members and individuals that are affected. Headquarters is located in Washington, D.C. We have a few employees that live in the area, but most of us work remotely from around the U.S. in different states.
So, what are some of the most common impacts that FASD can have on a person?
We see, in generality, we always say that it affects each individual differently, meaning that if you had 10 people that had an FASD, it would look very differently among those 10 people. But in general, we tend to see challenges with learning, we see challenges with memory, self-regulation. The first diagnosis that an individual usually gets is ADHD due to the forgetfulness and challenges with focusing. We can see challenges with impulsivity, and probably the most problematic symptom that that an individual can have is that disconnect between choices and consequences, where they just don't put together, if I make this decision, that could happen.
So, that being said, with all the related conditions, is there ever a chance of misdiagnosis?
Always. It has several symptoms that look very similar to other neurodevelopmental disorders. Commonly, it's confused with ADHD. As I said, autism, it can look very similar to autism. Individuals with an FASD can be very rigid in their thinking. They can be very black and white in their thinking, and this can appear very similar to a person with autism.
So, how does FASD United go about reaching out to the affected population?
We have a robust online presence that we reach out that way. We also are involved in grants that promote connection to the population. We call it the FASD field, and that would include everyone who works in that field, including individuals who've been affected. We have a family navigator program where people can go online and ask questions about FASD and connect with them. We also are building our speakers bureau to include individuals who have an FASD, to give them a voice. It's really important for us to feel like that we represent what their needs are. Sometimes in bureaucracies, people sit around the table and they decide what someone's challenge is and how they're going to fix it. And we find this to be kind of disrespectful and neglectful of the individuals who are affected, because they're the ones that can tell us what their challenges are, what they feel like, and what their needs are like, you know, what we can do to better equip them to be successful.
So, in your time with the organization, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
I read through the question about successes, and I'm smiling because it's really challenging to think about one particular turning point. I think the fact that we have been in existence for over 30 years and have weathered the course of time, I think empowering those people who have a voice is a big success moment for us. I think in the United States right now, we are kind of focusing on passing the FASD Respect Act, and we have gotten sponsors on both the Republican and the Democrat side in the House and the Senate, and that speaks to our ability to speak to the issue and rally people. That feels pretty validating. Adding new affiliates to the affiliate network so that we've got representation across the United States also feels pretty successful.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep pushing forward in advocacy and community awareness, what would you say?
I would say the road can be challenging, but don't give up. And the reason FASD is complex, and it's not always easily recognized, and we have a real shortage of people who are doing diagnosis, and sometimes it's easy to lose heart, and you look at this big, huge, complex issue and think, how are we ever going to make any headway? But I would say every step matters, and that to not to lose heart, to educate yourself and the people that you know about the risks of drinking while pregnant, and spread the news that there's no safe amount of alcohol during pregnancy.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Thank you. Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
You're missing a couple of strings on this bass guitar. Is that how you learned it, and you never bothered to buy two new ones, or is there a plan?
After 2 years, I mean, what's the point spending money and a lot of... Like, two is enough. It's adequate. Anybody can play this bass.
Revolution Rock airs Saturday nights, 7 to 9 p.m. on CJAM 99.1 FM in the Windsor, Detroit area.
We are a syndicated award-winning radio show that broadcasts 60s garage rock, 70s punk and new wave, surf, alternative, indie, and old and new music within these genres.
You can also hear us online at cjam.ca, iHeartRadio, and visit our website at revrock.blogspot.com.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Susan Ellsworth told us a little bit about FASD United, and we heard from author Dave Mathias. In this segment of our show, Jess Lewis will be telling us a little bit about her latest training efforts for the Paralympics and about a recent disabilities gala she attended. So, last time you were on, you were talking a little bit about some of the training you were planning to do for the next Paralympics. Can you highlight some of what you've been up to?
Yeah, sure. It's really exciting. I just got a new racing chair, which I'm just kind of getting used to now. It's a different position. So the muscles in the body are still a little bit sore, but we're getting better. I'm still doing the same training 6 days a week. I do 5 days in my racing chair, and then I'll do 2 days in the gym. Some of the days are a double day. It takes up a lot of time, but I love to do it.
So, for those who might not be as familiar with the dynamics of a racing chair, tell me a little bit about how the speed and handling work as opposed to a regular one.
Yeah, so the racing chair has three wheels. There's two wheels in the back and one wheel in the front. And then sitting in the racing chair, you're actually kneeling, so your legs get tucked up underneath you. But there is also frames or racing chairs that you can have a foot plate put in as well if the athlete isn't able to bend their legs properly. But for me, I have a neat leg one. And then the push is a little bit different than what a day chair is. In the racing chair, we wear gloves, and we actually are just punching the rim instead of grabbing it. So that helps you to generate a little bit more speed going forward, yeah.
So, with all the training, what's been the most rewarding aspect of getting yourself ready for the next round of games?
Just seeing, like, even little improvements in training. Like, this morning I had a really great session that I was more up that I've never been able to hold before. So it's kind of just nice to see, you know, not every session is that fantastic. So when you do have those breakthrough moments, even though it might seem kind of a little accomplishment, but in the real scheme of things, it's huge. And then just being able to have the opportunity to represent my country is phenomenal.
So recently, you attended a gala for Flex for Access. Tell me a little bit about the experience.
Oh, I had a great time. It's so wonderful to always, catch up with Jess Silver, who's the founder, and just to see kind of the impact that she has on the world of parasport and, helping to get gyms more accessible and just to have those, or like hear those updates is absolutely incredible. And she's such an amazing person and, just having the opportunity to support her, I really enjoyed that.
So, do you see yourself going to more events like this in support of the parasport world?
Absolutely, yeah. The world of parasport has given me so much in my life, and if I can, be a part of anything that brings that forward to somebody else, then I'm all in.
That being said, do you have any advice for any aspiring young athletes out there who might be wondering, would I be good enough? Does parasport have something to offer me?
Absolutely. Parasport, there's so many different, sports available that you can get involved with. And no matter what your limitation is, there is a sport out there for you. And you just have to find, what works best for you. And just to not be afraid to go after that and to, not limit yourself on what you think you can accomplish, because I think you'll be able to surprise yourself.
So I've heard many times that when you're out there engaging in the games, it's a freeing thing. You're not worried about what might hold you back. You're kind of living in the moment. You found this to be so?
Yeah, absolutely. I love competing and just the adrenaline rush from that. And you kind of have to tell yourself, I've done all the training leading up to this, and I just have to have faith in that process and know that when it comes down to competing, you just have to put everything on that line and just enjoy the experience as well. There will be times that, you have races that, may not go the way that you want it to, but you just have to use that as a learning experience to move forward onto the next one.
Seem to remember that from our last interview where you said might not have gotten a medal, but you did reach a personal best, which was, in your mind, something that made it all worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Tokyo, at the Paralympics of Tokyo, I was fourth in the 100, so just off the podium, which was tough, but it was still amazing to know that I'm among the top five in the world in this sport. So
what are the next steps in your training work?
So I have four major championships coming up over the next 2 years. World Championships in Paris in July next summer, and then the Pan American Games in Santiago, Chile in November, and then in 2024 we have another World Championships back in Japan, and then hopefully Paris Paralympic Games.
So, when you travel to these places, do you find that the culture there is especially welcoming or embracing of para-athletes?
Absolutely. I think, having the opportunity for our country to host Paralympic Games or even just the smaller, like, world championships that are just para-athletics, it's a real eye-opener to, you know, the people in the country of what people with disabilities can accomplish, as well as maybe the areas that they need to work on to make things more accessible. But I have always felt so welcome, and that's, you know, such a powerful thing that the games can leave that lasting impression on countries to make those changes.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Still can't get over it, folks. Stories Dave told about those parents having their children potentially taken away because they have a disability. You can't make an assumption about a person without actually knowing their story. Certainly not without knowing their skill set, their personalities, what makes them who they are. It's easy to look at a baseline statistic and say, I know everything about this. But no statistic, no medical text ever written can factor in human strength, the ability to go above and beyond, especially when it comes to children. Fact is, they can be as loving parents as anyone else in society. It's not our place as society to dictate to others what their family structure should look like. If they've made an informed, responsible choice to have children, who are we to say outright they're not going to succeed without giving them that chance? No one has the right to make that call. If we're all one moment away from having a disability ourselves, just one anomaly in one set of circumstances. Truth is, we're not just shortchanging the parents by doing this, we're shortchanging the children as well. Growing up, learning from the influences of someone with a disability give us a greater appreciation for the diversity, the richness of the tapestry of life that's all around us. These kids aren't going to learn what it really means day to day to have disability or to care for someone who has one just by reading about it or casual observation. You have to live it, come to understand it. One of my greatest influences as a person with a disability was a member of my own family. He, like me, had survived a stroke. There was such a connection, such a power in his wisdom, that I became all the better for having that familial connection, having that understanding that this is not some cold, insular thing. This is a part of my heritage. This is a part of my tapestry. And honestly, everyone has the right to know who they are, where they came from. A child might ask the question, why can't I be with Mom and Dad? What makes them so different from me? They move a little differently, or they see a little differently, or they hear a little differently. So what? If they're loving, caring, decent, hard-working people, it is no one's place to tell them they're not good enough to be parents. It's no one's place to say they're not fit to have a family of their own. The fact is, at that point, we cease to be a concerned, involved society. We become judges. And I don't think anyone would proudly hold up the title of one who discriminates against the disability community. You can work with them, stand with them, learn their mind, but you cannot outright say that they are incapable of this. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.